nice brand new ambulances fully stocked. Or, you know, that money can go elsewhere. I mean, that's quite a few salaries, people that, you know, potentially we could hire on.
Across the state, EMS operations, particularly in rural areas, face similar or even worse financial problems. The Jackson County Ambulance Service in southern Illinois says the state's low reimbursement rates don't always cover the cost of supplies, like medicine or the cost of gasoline when EMTs have to drive long distances for a call. The service's director says revenue from property taxes has covered the gap, for now. In Towanda, the fire department says a lack of money has forced it to cut back services to weeknights and weekends. Towanda outsources to Bloomington's fire department the rest of the time. Lieutenant Governor Sheila Simon says longer response times can be a matter of life and death.
Rural EMS providers have to consolidate, particularly if they have to change their base location. That can mean longer times for the ambulance to get to the person who's in need and longer time to get back to a healthcare facility.
Simon helped a special Illinois House committee examine the problems emergency operations face. Lawmakers made a series of recommendations, like asking the state to find new revenue sources. But that's easier said than done. Representative Donald Moffitt, a Republican from Gilson who co-chaired the committee, has introduced a measure that would increase the surcharge on cell phone bills from 73 cents to a dollar, with most of the fee going to 911 authorities. But he says a lack of money isn't the only problem EMS operations face.
We heard of situations where individuals had been served in the military, been in combat zones, had been medical officers in a combat situation, trained to high levels for battlefield rescue, and yet in civilian life, maybe they were just an EMT. And so when they come back to civilian life, they can only use EMT skills when responding.
Last month, Governor Pat Quinn signed an executive order that will allow military experience to count towards getting a paramedic license, though that will take months to implement. In the meantime, EMS operations have benefited from some rule changes. High school students are now able to volunteer with paramedics as provisional first responders. The program creates larger staffs while encouraging the next generation of paramedics. There also used to be a state rule that required two emergency responders be on hand before an ambulance could leave the station to answer a call. Two EMTs are still required for calls, but now only one medic has to be on board, and another can meet the ambulance at the scene. Representative Moffitt says that leads to faster response times and better chances of survival.
Person had a heart attack, their heart has stopped. Rule of thumb that I've been told is that each minute of delay reduces the chance of survival by 10%. So 4 minute delay, 40% chance it won't be a satisfactory outcome.
I'm going to put some oxygen in your nose, okay? And a little tickle in your nose.
So far, America Ambulance hasn't had to worry about any budget crunches. That meant a full EMT team was dispatched to help the elderly Springfield woman whose nurse called 911. After receiving basic first aid in the ambulance, she arrived at a local hospital for further treatment, all less than a half hour after the call.
Okay. Thank you, Joe.
You're welcome.
I'll never forget, Joe.
I'm Chris Slaby.
You're listening to WYLL. I'm Chris Berube. Recently, the gun debate in America has gone something like this. Gun control advocates say that we need new laws to stop the wrong people from buying guns, while Second Amendment absolutists respond that we should just enforce the laws that we already have. Very few people are talking about one of the biggest issues around guns today. It's estimated that 40% of gun sales are facilitated on the internet. With online gun sales, it's much easier to exploit loopholes that let people get around existing gun laws. Stephanie Mensimer is a reporter for Mother Jones magazine, and last month she wrote a story about a man named Dmitry Smirnov. He shouldn't have been able to buy a gun, but with the internet, he found one through a website called ArmsList, and then he brought it to Illinois. The reason that Smirnov wanted a gun is because he'd been dating a woman online named Jetka Vessel. He lived on the West Coast, and she lived in Oak Park, Illinois. And after she ended the relationship, he did something very extreme.
After that, he basically stalked her from afar, and he lived in Vancouver, Canada. And after a couple of years of this going on, she'd gotten a protective order against him or had some sort of stay-away order because of the harassment. He went online to this website called ArmsList, where you can basically arrange to meet a private seller of a weapon. It's a way of getting around a background check. So you just find somebody who's got a gun, and they can sell it to you in person for cash, and there's no record of the transaction, really. It's illegal to sell a gun to somebody who you know couldn't pass a background check. There's lots of different rules about this, but they're very difficult to enforce when these things are arranged through the internet. And that's basically what ArmsList does. This guy, he's actually a Russian guy from Canada, went to Washington State, where he arranged to meet up with someone who sold him a handgun. And the guy who sold him the handgun actually was kind of freaked out about the whole transaction enough that he wouldn't sell him any ammunition. So he sold him the gun, but not the ammunition. And so that guy, the murderer, went on to find a homeless person who would go to a gun store to buy the ammunition for the gun. He traveled to Illinois, and he put a GPS device on the car of the woman he was stalking, and he followed her around for a couple of days. She was volunteering for a Czech history museum. She was coming out of the building, and he shot her like 12 times. He later turned himself in and admitted the whole thing, and he's, I think, been put in prison for life. And the guy who sold him the gun has also been prosecuted as well. But a couple months ago, actually it was in December, right before the Newtown shooting, our Brady Campaign Against Gun Violence sued ArmsList on behalf of the woman's family, saying that they had bore some responsibility for what happened to her for making this gun available to the guy. And so that case is currently pending.
So ArmsList, when you describe it out loud as something that kind of facilitates these sales that are allowed without background checks, I mean, it sounds illegal on the face of it. How is it allowed to legally operate?
Well, it's not illegal in a lot of states to sell a gun to your neighbor without a background check. And so that's what this site does. They're just like classified ads almost. You can only buy weapons from people within your own state. So if you're looking for a gun, like, and you lived in Virginia, you would go to the Virginia part of the site and you would find a seller in Virginia who could make that transaction. There's nothing illegal about that. I mean, it is illegal to sell a gun to some, even in a private sale, to sell a gun to somebody you know couldn't pass a background check. There was an investigation in New York City 2 years ago, I think, that Mayor Bloomberg put in motion, where they did some sting operations, and they used ArmsList and some other sites to try to buy guns. And the investigators contacted sellers of guns and made it very clear to them that they couldn't pass a background check. And more than 50% of those people still sold the guns. You know, it's not a very strong mechanism for keeping guns out of the wrong hands.
So talking about how this all went down, I mean, there's been a lot of discussion about enforcing mandatory background checks and closing a lot of loopholes. I mean, does something like ArmsList exist because of loopholes in the background check law?
Oh, sure. There are some states that do require a background check for all sales. And this is something that the Senate legislation that just passed out of the Judiciary Committee last week would make mandatory for the rest of the country. This bill, if it passed Congress, would put ArmsList out of business, I think, or it would at least require that people trying to arrange private sales still had to go through a licensed firearms dealer and have a background check.
So is there the sense that even if we had something like, you know, the universal background checks, that would not kind of suffocate the internet as a market for these guns?
No, it doesn't have to, but it would weed out the people like, you know, the guy from Canada who killed that poor woman in Illinois. He would have not been able to buy a gun from a licensed firearms dealer because he was not an American citizen. So, you know, even though he didn't have a criminal record, I don't actually know if they could have determined that from a background check, but just the fact that he didn't live here would have prevented him from buying a gun if he'd had to go through a background check.
That's Stephanie Bensimer, a reporter with Mother Jones Magazine. To see a link to her article and more stories about guns in America, visit us online at will.illinois.edu.
Support comes from the College of Media at Illinois, presenting the 15th Anniversary Ebert Fest this April 17th through 21st. Dozens of Roger Ebert's favorite movies will be shown in the newly renovated Virginia Theater. Festival passes are available now and individual tickets on sale April 1st. Details at ebertfest.com.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Monday. It's the 18th of March, 2013. It's the birthday of John Updike, born Reading, Pennsylvania, 1932. Went to Harvard, got married while he was still a student there. His ambition was to be published in The New Yorker. And the year he graduated from Harvard, he sold the magazine a poem and a short story. He went off to England to study at the Ruskin School of Drawing and Fine Art, but came back to New York, became a staff writer for the magazine, then moved to Ipswich, Massachusetts, where he set out to write his books about Harry Rabbit Angstrom, Rabbit Run, Rabbit Redux, Rabbit is Rich, and Rabbit at Rest, and the novella Rabbit Remembered. John Updike, who said, "My subject is the American Protestant small town middle class. I like middles. It is in middles that extremes clash, where ambiguity restlessly lies." It's the birthday of George Plimpton, New York City, 1927, the founding editor of the Paris Review, a job he held for 50 years, from 1953 until his death in 2003. It's the birthday of Manly Hall, born in Peterborough, Ontario, 1901, fascinated by the occult, went to live in New York, worked for a while on Wall Street, and spent hours in the New York Public Library, working on his great book, which came out in 1928, The Secret Teachings of All Ages, an encyclopedic outline of Masonic, Hermetic, Kabbalistic, and Rosicrucian symbolical philosophy. And it's the birthday of the poet Wilfred Owen, born in Shropshire, England, 1893, grew up in a well-to-do family. But when his grandfather died, it turned out the old man was broke. The family had to move into modest lodgings. Owen started writing poems as a boy, then enlisted to fight in World War I, became a lieutenant. Wounded in 1917, diagnosed with shell shock, sent to a hospital to recuperate, where he met the poet Siegfried Sassoon, and where he wrote many of his most famous poems, including Dulce et Decorum Est, a bitter poem that became the most famous to come out of World War I. The next year he went back to battle, and he was killed at the age of 25. Here's a poem for today by John Updike. The sometime sportsman greets the spring. When winter's glaze is lifted from the greens and cups are freshly cut and birdies sing, triumphantly the stifled golfer preens in cleats and slacks once more and checks his swing. This year he vows his head will steady be, his weight shift smooth, his grip and stance ideal. And so they are, until upon the tee befall the old contortions of the reel. So too the tennis player, torpid from hibernal months of television sports, perfects his serve and feels his knees become sheer muscle in their unaccustomed shorts. Right arm relaxed, the left controls the toss, which shall be high.